We are still several months away, but if these programs are going to release schedules, going to give us kickoff times, and going to try to start the hype train, then let's talk some college football. I am Mike Ossie, and this is another episode of Mike Drop here throughout the Sports Now family of networks, and also made possible by the Believe Network. You can find every episode of Mike Drop available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn, etc. Everywhere you get your podcast, whether it's on a run, just relaxing, you want to kill time while you're at work and ignore your boss, go to those platforms and listen to Mike Drop. And for this show, I will be joined by Eric Froton, the lead college football analyst and NFL draft analyst with NBC Sports. And we're going to talk about Pitt, West Virginia, and Penn State, his expectations, if they align with maybe what I'm thinking, and even some comments by a head coach of one of these teams, you probably already can guess, and what he thinks of what a very, very prominent head coach is doing this offseason with his new program, and that is Deion Sanders at Colorado. And I'm also happy to hear that I maybe will be able to get Eric in person. We did meet in Las Vegas covering the Shrine Bowl and different events, so maybe I will get Eric in person again, as with NBC potentially covering, I'll switch the box there, potentially covering West Virginia at Penn State, rekindling that rivalry, of course, in State College. So Eric, first off, how you been, man? It's been a minute. I did meet you in Vegas. We had some fun. You got to watch me, you know, crash and burn playing some video games on the field there.
That's correct. Yeah, our boy Malik Obi, you know, frankly, technical skills that I don't possess. I don't know about your, you know, coding acumen, but that ain't
my
skill
set. No, yeah, I cannot do the coding. No, I can edit this all day long, but the coding, I don't think so. But I need another redo of being able to play his new rendition of Techno Bowl that we were able to play there at the Stadium in Vegas. But yeah. Yeah, and it's going to be down in Frisco now, actually, moving the Shrine Bowl. So,
I don't get to go to Vegas again.
What? Well, we can find a way to get to Vegas. We can find a way and a reason to get to Vegas.
Where is it going to be this year, though? I didn't realize that. Where is it?
I heard Frisco, Texas.
Frisco, Texas. Okay. Yeah. We know the Frisco Bowl.
I think they're getting closer to the Senior Bowl. They're trying to make it easier for those athletes with where they work out, maybe travel, making it easier. Although I can argue flights to Vegas are pretty cheap. I don't know. And you're not in Dallas, you're close to Dallas. But I will digress here. But again, Eric Froton of NBC Sports, Mike Drop here with Believe and the Sports Now family of networks. And before we get to West Virginia and Penn State, as they rekindle that rivalry, they do it on NBC at night, and we get to share some creamery, do a live show, and then cover it there at Happy Valley. I do want to get your thoughts on the head coach of Pitt and Pat Narduzzi. And he's no stranger to letting you know and letting everyone know how he feels. He literally holds two press conferences before every game, and one of them usually is off the cuff, feet up, and it's like you're having a beer with the guy. And he is very free sailing and gives his thoughts. And, you know, I kind of generally respect that. I like covering somebody like that. I like somebody like that in general. But we're in the offseason right now. He doesn't have to talk. He did recently, though, offer his opinions on what's going on with the transfer portal in particular. And Deion Sanders, who takes over Colorado, it's a floundering program for 20-plus years, 30 really, most of my life, but yes, in the past had some glory days. He's trying to fix it and get it back to where it was, and this is a Power 5 job for him. To do that, 70-plus players, he's basically telling to get out of town. It's not like they wanted necessarily to be gone. He walked in the door and said, I'm going to get rid of most of you. And that's a 1-11 team, so a lot of work to do, a lot to fix if he wants to win right away. And Pat Narduzzi kind of said, hey, I get using the transfer portal. We've used it, but doing it to get rid of 70-plus, doing it to get rid of an entire roster and basically walking in the door, not even giving kids a decision that it should be for them, telling them you prefer them to leave and they need to transfer, which happens around college sports, even if it's not talked about as much. But that's not what the transfer portal was intended for. He has a problem with it. He doesn't think anyone should run a program that way and throw all kinds of shade at Deion Sanders. So, Eric, as somebody who's covering this on a national landscape here, what are your thoughts? What do you think even your colleagues' thoughts are on what Pat said about how Deion Sanders is handling the transfer portal and just scrapping an entire team, not a few key positions, but an entire team from 1 year to the next.
Well, you know, it's not exactly unheard of for head coaches to want to come in and establish their own sort of a culture in a program. I don't think I can fault Mr. Dion for that, you know, of course. Sure. It's just for the entire timeline of college football, you didn't have the current transfer rules. So you couldn't do that, you know, and even to be able to do it, yeah, coaches switch schools all the time. That's you know, it's not like he's the only coach switching schools. Yeah. A lot of coaches would love to do that if they could and just take all the sub three, you know, 4-star players, say, okay, you're out, and we'll just bring in a whole new guy. I mean, they would love to do that, but you can't, because one, you couldn't before, but two, you don't have the magnetism of Deion Sanders. I don't. You don't, unfortunately, right. Mike. You know, no offense. You know, I don't hold that sort of.
I got some charisma, but I don't. I'm not prime time. Not prime time. That's fair.
I do not mean to besmirch.
Right. I'm not prime time. I can't pull up a Jerry Curl as well as Deion Sanders.
Yep. I can't do that. I can't talk like Nick Saban on the trail. You know, I can't do that.
So. No. You can't flash some rings either. No.
No. I don't have. That's not in my wheelhouse. So it is in Deion. Right. So like, man, if you have, this is kind of a one of a kind thing where you have just this tornado sweeping in, and not only is he coming in and bringing new players, but he's coming in and he's influencing the entire school's administration to change well established transfer policies that were not afforded to Carl Durrell, you know, before him, you know, or Montgomery or Mel Tucker or any of those guys who were there. They didn't get that, you know, they didn't have that luxury of the transfer portal. Now it's open season, all right, because Deion comes in and that's just part of it. So to on the other side of that, you know, from Narduzzi's point of view, he's like, well, you know, that isn't how he was sold the portal. It wasn't sold that way to him.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, you, and in his defense, look at the Nard Dog. You're taking 3-star guys left and right, and you're developing those guys from day one, and you're sending them off to the league. Look at that. I mean, how many?
Yeah, they're absolutely sending a lot of players to the league every year. 100%.
To the league.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm at, you know, I was at the combine again this year, and who do I see? You see Haba. He was at the Shrine Bowl. You see Haba. Cansey. See, watching him in person run his 4.6,
I was there. Was, 40. Yeah, man.
Yeah, you were there too. Like, it's
all
the other defensive, you know, three techs, you know, ones that you see running, you see their bodies moving like they're, you know, like they're just the ripples of their giant figures moving. Dude, Kansi was tight. Everything was tight. It's just muscle that's moving. Yeah. 285 pounds of muscle going down there. It was just a sight to behold. But like, that's what you guys do. You develop and you do it extremely well. And he's saying, all right, well, what am I going to do? I'm going to go and bust my butt. I'm going to take 2, maybe 3 years where you take a kid like Ahaba, comes over from Italy, and you mold that kid into being a badass defensive end.
Yeah,
and walks. Like, Addison is it.
I was going to bring up you. This is Pat Narduzzi a year removed from right after the ACC championship, which was a season that really changed the mindset of Pat Narduzzi around college football, certainly among Pitt fans. There were some Pitt fans that wanted him, let's admit this, wanted him gone earlier in that season, certainly the year before, wins the ACC crown with Pickett. He's a Heisman candidate. Couldn't have went any better, really, for Pitt outside of maybe winning one more game and getting in the playoff. And then Addison bounces, and he does it for money. Let's face it, that's what he did it for to USC, which is fully in his right.
No offense. I live in San Diego, guys. Guess what? I don't even get any money to come out to the West Coast.
I gotta tell you, San Diego's nicest climate in the country, so I might go there for free too.
I do want to dispel that rumor, but I guarantee you your weather is better right now. The worst in the 18 years since I emigrated from the East. I grew up in Boston. So 18 years, it's been the worst winter into the spring. It's right now outside, it's gray. It's been no that sun way. There. It's going to be that way
nothing,
until July.
Nothing beamed in your face. Yeah, I really feel bad. I really feel bad in January with what you're dealing with out there. But nonetheless, Pat Narduzzi apparently feels bad as well. So he wanted to keep Addison in Pittsburgh. Didn't want that to happen. But in all seriousness, I'm sure he's still upset about that because obviously Pitt was very upset about that. But to the flip side, Pat Narduzzi, yeah, he's 90% of his roster developing players, which is what you generally have to do with that type of program, unless you're Deion or unless you're really a top dog like in Alabama or you have a Nick Saban, et cetera, or even you're USC and have the LA money. But
and weather.
Yeah, and weather, but, or media market, too.
And media, yeah, all right. of it. You get to be but star Pat in L.A. Narduzzi, for your last year of college?
Right.
Are you kidding me?
But Pat Narduzzi, did bring in a transfer quarterback, not only this year, who is a local Pittsburgh kid that went from Boston College and now coming back to Pittsburgh, but also
Notre Dame first, too.
Notre Dame
five-star recruit.
Right. So he brings him in. That's a transfer. That's a kid that they swung and missed at trying to recruit years ago. Mm-hmm. And also the year earlier, it didn't work out. But they brought in a kid from USC to Pitt in Slovis. So there's some hypocrisy there, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. That, yeah, you're not – maybe the portal was not designed to get rid of 70-plus kids. Because I think also Narduzzi's point is that these kids commit to a school. It's one thing if they want to transfer because that's their right and that's the rules and that's how it should be now. It's only fair if coaches can leave. They can do the same. But when you walk in the door and tell them – I know you committed and you moved here and your family wanted you here and you're all sold about here, but you're not good enough. Get out. Like maybe that wasn't the intention of the portal. It's being used that way across basketball and football.
That's what we're getting.
Yeah, we're getting it for sure. So maybe that wasn't the intention, but it's not like Narduzzi's not using the portal to his advantage as well. And it's also not like the year with Slovis didn't work out. It wasn't just that Slovis wanted to leave and get more playing time somewhere else. Pitt also kind of said to him, hey, it didn't work out. You're best to transfer. So Pitt's done the same thing. So there's some hypocrisy there, but it's interesting to have Narduzzi speak out so clearly on Deion. What do you think the impact of Deion is going to be separate from Narduzzi's comments in terms of the instant ability to turn Colorado around? Is that possible? And is this something that's going to be a job jumping thing for Deion? Like there already are rumors that he's looking at Florida State if they happen to have a down year. They didn't want him once, but now maybe they would. Like, is he going to be long term locked in there in your eyes at least for a few years? Can he turn it around quickly? What's going to be the Deion story, and what can the impact be on college football? Or will there ever be any rules that are kind of trying to fight this? Like, do you think anyone is going to try to put any clamps in saying, we like the transfer portal, we like NIL, but we don't like 70-plus players. We got to do something. They did it with windows being tighter this past season to try to fix the Addison problem.
Oh, yeah, you're going to see continuous tinkering. To think that, you know, barely 2 years, into this experiment that they've thought out all the loopholes and the kinks, no way. There's going to be plenty of nibbling around and tinkering. That's going to come for years to come. Yeah, we haven't settled science at all. If any, I think it's quite the opposite. I think it's, as we see, thousands of players in the portal at this point.
Right. Yeah.
Obviously, you will continue to have constrictions, and that's a good thing, because let's take the Keaton Slovis example. He's new coach comes into USC, the domino effect. He brings in, football Jesus, Caleb Williams, as he is right to do. Why wouldn't you bring in?
Right. Caleb? Why would you not? Right. You want to be in the best situation for yourself. You don't want to just lose.
Slovis is probably already leaving anyways. He already got overtaken by Dart. Miller Moss is pretty good. Right. It's like he was just one of three guys there at that point. And the writing was on the wall for Slovis even before I feel that he came in. So Lincoln Riley comes in, boom. Slovis says, all right, I'm going to go and head to Pitt. But it wasn't a step up, it was a step down, but that's how it goes.
Yeah.
That being said, he comes in, he lasts a year, and now he's gone.
Right.
Because he was going down. That's what happens. When you're transferring down, you're getting, and a lot of times, perceived damaged goods or a player who has perceived flaws who might not, succeed in that parallel or maybe a tick down
program. Or maybe you want playing time, because there's a lot of kids actually that do transfer down, but it's from a major program where maybe they're a backup to being a legit starter.
And what are you going to do?
At a group of five, right.
You go do your thing. There's plenty of those guys. That's totally what I'm saying. But we're talking about Keaton Slovis. And let me ask you something from your point of view. You watched a lot of Keaton Slovis. Are you sad to see Keaton Slovis go, Mike?
No. Well, I'm not going to claim to be a Pitt fan, but it didn't work out. It made sense for him to be gone.
I can't whether see it be happening.
Whether it be injuries or whatever the case, it didn't work out. And honestly, even the flip side, JT Daniels, the same thing happened at West Virginia. Came there looking to save everyone. He was looking to save himself, looking to get enough value to go to the NFL. That was clearly his plan. Didn't work out for him. Didn't work out for them. Everyone agreed to part ways. He's gone. He's at Rice. He probably wants to be in the NFL now.
At Rice. Congratulations.
Right. Yeah. He's the Van Wilder of the portal. He's going to transfer every year. Yeah. So I had somebody actually somewhere that had a problem with me saying that on the air. But anyway, it's a perfect explanation of what he's been doing, but it's within his right. And you do see, this is mostly a college basketball thing, but there have been some players that they tried to transfer too late. They already got to a practice, and then they tried to transfer. There were players that were the NCAA didn't want to let transfer or made them sit out for a while. That also seems like against what the intention of the portal was. But they're still trying to figure things out, and there's different rules in place. And it seems like the NCAA does not want the portal to be made a mockery of, even though they want the portal to exist, and they're allowing it to exist. So it will be interesting what happens in the aftermath of a season in which Deion walks in the door, puts a YouTube video up that his son puts up on his own channel in which Deion says, "You're all not good enough. You're gone." Like, it wasn't like he just changed the roster. He didn't just change the roster. He kind of did make a mockery of those players and the portal. So I just wonder what would happen from that. They've already tried to tighten things up a little bit with windows, making Jose Perez wasn't allowed to play last year at West Virginia, had to sit out, and now he's going to come back next year. Those things could occur, so we'll see. But it's just interesting to have a head coach speak out against it, and that's what Narduzzi does. That's what Narduzzi's been doing, and that's what Narduzzi's going to do. Mic drop here on the Believe Network, Sports Now family of networks. Mike Osti, Eric Froton here, lead college football analyst and NFL draft analyst. And Eric, we're now going to slide into Pat Narduzzi's team, the Pitt Panthers. They win the ACC a couple years ago. They have a Heisman candidate. They kind of do it as a surprise. A lot of veterans there. This past year, a lot of NFL prospects again, but they didn't have the year they thought they were going to have. They certainly weren't a national contender, even though it was a good year, and they do make a bowl game, and they're able to win that bowl game. They didn't win the major bowl game a year earlier after the ACC title year. It's another year with expectations, even though it's another year with a new transfer quarterback, a little bit of a younger roster, an offensive line that didn't play as well as they were supposed to last year, that has pressure to do it again this year. DraftKings and other sports books have them at 6.5 right now in terms of an over-under for wins. I would imagine, knowing Pitt and the program and what they think of themselves now after winning the ACC a couple years ago, that 6.5, if they go 7 or lower, they're not going to be satisfied. But what's your view of what to expect from the Pitt program this year with, once again, a new transfer quarterback?
I'll tell you, they don't get any help from the schedule now, do they? Right. You know, when you're going to go and you're going to have a fun game at West Virginia, it's a rivalry.
On the road.
Everybody enjoys that. It's right on the road, you know. You got a limp in West Virginia. At least that's kind of the perception. Right. And you got to go on the road to Morgantown. Nobody wants to do that. And as you have pointed out, Mike, that's a night game, and funny things can happen. Funny things. But also, you don't just get West Virginia. You get Cincinnati too.
Yeah.
Like, oh man, do you really want to do that? That's not exactly an enjoyable, welcoming invite. Okay, come on in, Cincinnati. I mean, I know it's not Luke Fickell there anymore, but That's week two after a nice little cupcake against Wofford. So, you know, that's before you even hit the ACC schedule. You get 2 out of 3 games that are real games. And a lot of Power 5 teams don't have real games.
Yeah.
Especially even some of the big schools don't have those games. You know, you're playing exclusively G5 FCS teams. in those the beneath games. But then you go, you know, I mean, North Carolina at home, you got a Heisman candidate quarterback. They bring in Nate McCollum from Georgia Tech, who's a great slot receiver guy I love and his return man. You got Tez Walker coming over there from the MAC. I mean, oh boy, that's going to be a good offense. Then you go to Virginia Tech. You've got to feel all right. But I mean, hell, again, you're going to Virginia Tech.
A lot of their big games are on the road.
Place to play. You don't want to be there. And then you host Louisville. Okay, changing over. All right. At Wake, at Notre Dame. Bringing in Florida State's the favorite to win the ACC right now. All right, so one of your home games is against Florida State. Delightful. At least you got Syracuse coming in. That's a good time. And then and Boston College. That helps. And you travel to Duke, you know, which would be a coin flip. Because, hey, props to Mike Elko. Riley Leonard, really good quarterback. That's a good team, guys. That's a real good team. So I'm eyeballing here. I'm leaning over.
Okay.
But I don't love Dracovic. That's a big problem for me.
Well, see, that's, I feel like, the driving force of the season. It did not work out with Slovis, and that's why a lot of Pitt fans feel like the year didn't go the way they wanted it to go, and whether he was hurt or not, it's a different conversation. But Dracovic's now there. He's a local kid. It's taken him a journey to get there. You feel like he's a veteran, established QB. They don't have the weapons they had a couple years ago with Pickett. Why do you not like him?
Well, two-time cast-off, you know, went from Notre Dame, lost out to Ian Book, then got over-recruited with Tyler Buchner there, who's now at Alabama. Goes over to BC, where Jeff Hafley takes over. You know, defensive coach Frank Cignetti, brings in an NFL guy. Hafley was the DC at Ohio State, so, like, he was an extremely well-qualified guy to go in. So, like, I have really high hopes, and he's working with Zay Flowers. So he looked – first season, I thought, like, there was real, like, NFL potential. Like, he looked – his arm is there.
Okay.
But I feel like defense has kind of smartened up to him in terms of – I don't think he makes good decisions a lot of times. And that's really what I think kind of came to the forefront. You know, 2 years ago, breaks his hand. That was awful. He can throw away 2021. That was out. You know, it hurts. Comes back in 2022, and I expected to see the 2020 Dracovic. We didn't get it, you know, and there's a reason why he isn't at BC anymore, you know.
Right.
And Moorhead outplayed him, and that's, you know, a fairly nondescript three-star young guy.
That's fair,
because
a lot of Pitt fans, it's polarizing. They're either excited or they didn't want to change, and they wanted to maybe – there was even some Pitt fans that actually wanted Patty to get a shot. But to be fair –
I thought Patty was all right in the bowl game.
Right.
He's but elusive. He's got some moxie. Like,
hey,
I didn't mind him.
Yeah. Speaking of the transfer portal, Patty probably
like
should have transferred out.
Too. Christian Villieu. And that's the other thing that kind of makes me feel better.
Patty actually looked okay
to me.
Yeah. There were some that thought Patty was a dog. That was the exact quote I heard. But he kept staying loyal. He probably should have transferred out 2 years ago. Like, use the portal if you want to play. But anyway, he stayed loyal. But there's a polarizing effect of Dracovic coming in, and I think a lot of people are losing sight of what you just said. It's not like he's coming in to do this, you know, LeBron James back to Cleveland thing. Like, I'm going to do it for the
hometown hero.
Right. Like, he's basically taking an opportunity to be at a major program in a Power 5 still and increase his value and fix what got messed up before. If that didn't get messed up, he probably would never have played for Pitt. He's not doing them a favor. He's trying to help himself too.
Absolutely. It is a symbiotic relationship
here with
Dracovic. Right. Keep in mind, people, all right? I'm not just pulling this out of thin air. He completed 59% of his passes, all right? He's under 60% red flag right away.
Yeah, barely, but he's under 60. Yeah,
brutal.
59. Yeah,
8-13 big time throw to turnover worthy play rate. Yikes.
Yeah,
and a 55 passing grade. I mean, I am not a PFF is end all be all type of guy, but look, those are not promising marks. And they've gotten, the year before, he had a 72 passing grade, he just wasn't good. He's got, and that's kind of what I was getting to is, his development stalled, and he wasn't making good decisions is what my problem was when I'm watching him, and I'm watching his eyes and what he's going with. And he's got a first-round superstar who we got to see at the Shrine Bowl in person, Zay Flowers rocked up putting 10 pounds on in the offseason, and he looks incredible.
Yeah, he
does. And everybody's raving about him. And you look, he's a first round talent. And you can't have a big season with him? All right. I'm sorry. Right. I don't mean to put a bucket of water on this whole thing, but you know, hey, you lost Jared Wayne too, right? He's gone. I like Bub Means. I thought he showed promise in the bowl. And I'm curious what you think a little bit, because he can fill the outside role. But I have concerns about Jakovic.
I mean, there were concerns last year if Pitt had enough receiver help for Slovis. And they did have some emerge, and some thought maybe some were underrated and under Addison the year before. It's going to be a new cast of characters now. I think the only difference for Pitt, maybe for me, and I think over, I don't think more, I think 7 wins makes sense, like over 6.5, but I don't
just
think
it's such a well-coached team, too. That matters. It matters.
Like, right, and Narduzzi has really grabbed a hold of this. Of this program, he's developed really, really well. You can say what you want about his comments, but he's really owned this program and has really become a Pitt man and certainly made this program into much more than it was even 5 years ago. So you got to give him tons of credit for that. He stabilized himself there. If I had to predict right now, I would probably say over 6.5 at 7 wins. I don't think 8's going to happen because, as you alluded to and detailed, they have their big games on the road. And even though they should be heavily favored to beat West Virginia, which we'll get into here in a moment, it's on the road in Morgantown at night, and they barely beat a West Virginia team that was not good last year at home. So West Virginia could have won that game. So it's not going to be easy to go in there and win with a quarterback that's only going to be in your system for a couple weeks at that point after you're just dealing with another Power 5 team that's moving into a conference. Yeah, you'll beat Wofford, but like the ACC schedule won't be easy. They usually lose one or two of those games anyway. They've had problems with North Carolina before. Notre Dame obviously could be an issue, even though they do lose a game or two throughout a year. Florida State could surprise. They got really good at the end of the year. This ACC last year, and even the year that Pitt, even the year Pitt won the ACC, and even last year a little bit, this is what they should do. They took advantage of a major conference being a little down. Florida State's been down for a while. Miami's been disappointing for a while. Yeah. Clemson's been less than what they've been.
Clemson's been.
Yeah, right.
They dodged Clemson this year. That's good.
Right. You don't have to play Clemson, but still, Clemson is going to be back this year. Florida State should be really, really good. Miami should be better this year. You don't have all of them on the schedule, but the difference is that unlike last year and every other year, you were able to come out of a division of the Coastal, and all you had to do was beat the Coastal teams. That's it. Doesn't matter your overall record. And then you're in the conference championship game. That's also gone. So now you have to worry about what Clemson's doing. If Clemson's running through a schedule, even though you don't play them, they're going to get in the title game, and you're going to be dealing with them if you're even lucky to be there, because you're going off record to record. Florida State could have a better record.
Yeah, and you're going to play Florida State. Exactly.
Right. Right. So it will not be easy for Pitt by any means, and it will start off difficult for Pitt. So we will see what they do. Maybe they'll give you more of a ground and pound team, though. They actually had some success on the ground last year that could save them from having to worry about what a quarterback does. Eric Froton,
one layup, one non-power five team in your whole schedule.
Yeah, and Eric, now we're going to move in again. Eric Froton of NBC Sports, mic drop here on the Believe Network, throughout Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn, etc., and Pittsburgh Sports Now, West Virginia Sports Now, and Nittany Sports Now, or a Sports Now family of networks where we have coverage of all of these teams. That perfectly segues, though, talking about Pitt only having one non-Power 5 team on the schedule. Well, that's very similar, arguably even more brutal, to the schedule for the West Virginia Mountaineers. They have some of their bigger games this year at home, whereas in past years they have been on the road, certainly the rivalry games. They have Pitt at home this year, but they have a schedule that includes only one gimme game as well. They play Duquesne. That's FCS. It's actually a local team. Sure. They're right in Pittsburgh, too. It's in Morgantown, also freaking at night. They obviously are going to win that game like they've been beating up FCS teams every other year, too. But outside of that, they play Pitt and Penn State this year.
It's almost comical how bad both of them.
Schedule in the last couple of years has included multiple non-conference Power 5 historic rivals. They did beat Virginia Tech twice, but you lose to Pitt. It's not easy at all. They lost to Maryland those games recently, even though they're a similar program. You get in this year, you have to start the season. Now, you don't get Wofford first. You don't get Duquesne first. You start the year week one on the road. We're going to be there in Happy Valley, 100K, hardest place to play, arguably one of the hardest places to play, the defending Rose Bowl champs. They got high expectations here. We'll get to them later. It's not going to be easy either, even though a new roster. That's week one for you. You then get Duquesne, but then you got Pitt. They're at home, but that's still a Pitt team that's been better than you in recent years for sure, and it won't be easy at all.
Solid program.
And then you go into conference play, and they had their problems with conference play last year, and you're figuring to lose a couple games there. Last year, the Big 12, say what you want about the Big 12, they had five ranked teams, and TCU made
the
playoff.
Don't hate on the Big 12. Not hate on the Big 12.
TCU made the playoff. They went through the playoff, and they at least got to the championship game, even though they kind of got embarrassed there. So the Big 12 was not in any way bad last year.
Nope.
If it's going to be similar again, and this is going to be a 14-team gauntlet conference with Oklahoma and Texas still in there, and then you're adding Cincinnati, BYU, UCF, et cetera, Houston. It's not going to be easy at all in conference, but then you have those games outside of conference. West Virginia right now is being pegged at an over-under of 4.5, and obviously we don't even need to debate him. If that happens, they will then fire Neil Brown and move on. Ren Baker came on my show and said it was a year of evaluation. He wouldn't give me a win total, but I'm going to guess it's ahead of 4.5 and 5.
You're going to have to go over to keep your job. There's no
two ways about it. What's a reasonable season that you can expect from West Virginia? There are a lot of people really, really down. There are some of your colleagues even saying that 4.5 being generous and this team might win 2 games. It might be the worst season in 150-plus years of West Virginia football, which is the 15th winningest program ever. That would be insane. That, you know, could they potentially exceed 4.5 and actually have a solid year that gets them into a bowl game where they should expect to be normally?
Well, like you say, again, it's the lack of gimme factor. That's an issue. Yeah, but the one thing they do have going for them, you have to remember, they do have all those teams that are coming up. They get all the newbies, at least, to the Big 12. You know, they get Cincinnati at home. They get BYU at home.
Yeah.
They go away to UCF in the bounce house, and they go to Houston. But they play all four of them, at least. So, I mean, those are AAC moving up teams. So that's your saving grace. That's what you know, the Bulls in the market – can hang their hat on that, and obviously Duquesne. But then, obviously, I gotta look at Penn State and Pittsburgh as a pair of L's.
Yeah,
you know. So you're coming out of the early non-con or the straight non-con. You know, at one and two, Texas Tech, you get them at home. But dude, this is Texas Tech year two of Joey McGuire.
And West Virginia can't beat Texas Tech. They haven't been able to beat them in recent years.
Right. And not just Joey McGuire, who's a very respected.
I think we lost you mic wise there, Eric. I'm going to bring me back to where you were. We had some technical difficulties there with the mic prior to the show. Are we back?
We back?
We are back. So go back into it.
My apologies. And Texas Tech is no joke. Okay, Joey McGuire, defensive head coach, made his bones, extremely well respected, is running the show. But keep in mind, on offense, so like he's had a chance to change over the D, and then on offense, year two of Zach Kittley. Okay, we're talking about Sam Houston State during the pandemic. We saw them play up 4 times. They played Texas Tech, and they hung a 35 on them, you know, on Texas Tech. And they played, and you know, a couple other, it eludes me at the moment, but like they played a couple of, you know, pretty respectable P5 teams, and they were scoring on them. So 2021, Kittley gets the call up to Western Kentucky, brings his staff with him, brings the Stearns brothers, brings Bailey Zappi up there from Sam Houston, and starts lighting the CUSA on fire. That's the guy that Texas Tech has in town now. And he's already had his year zero of like resetting. They go and they bring in Dre McCray, who's a 2-time All-American, right, at the FCS level. They bring him in to play that valuable slot role. Jerran Bradley's in year two on the outside. Xavier White has been in there and proven himself already. Like, you have two seasoned quarterbacks that are in that system. The Houston QB, Donovan Smith's already been headed out. Bottom line is, year two Texas Tech is a team I believe in. That's a problem.
Okay.
At TCU, you know, all right? At Houston, all right? All right, you got a shot there.
Yeah, that's the Dana Holgorsen Bowl, and Houston's not been good. They've not been good the last few years, but they do score. They score a lot of points.
But they turn it over. No Nathaniel Dell.
They do. Right? Yeah.
Big time weapon. Number one receiver in all of college football last year. As a college fantasy guy myself. It was Dell.
Yeah.
Clayton Tune also. Fun fact, Clayton Tune, highest PFF rating, also second highest grade under pressure in the entire college football landscape last year was Clayton Tune. So they're not just losing a couple of guys, losing a couple of studs, a couple of legit dudes, and a four-year starter in Tune. So, like, you're talking about a reset. Does Donovan Smith transfer down from Texas Tech? Yeah. But who is he throwing to? Like, I like Sam Brown. Like, I'm okay, but this is – going to be not as good a team as they were last year. I just can't see that happening. Oklahoma State, again, you got a shot against Oklahoma State at home. Again, a turning over team.
I don't know, beat them last year on the road.
Yeah. Is it going to be British comedy legend Alan Bowman? Old friend Alan Bowman from Texas Tech to Michigan? We're talking a circuitous route back to the Big 12? Or – you know, is it going to be Garrett Rangel? Like that, I watched plenty of Garrett Rangel. You know what I did when Garrett Rangel started for Oklahoma State? I went to DraftKings, and I looked at DraftKings, and they listed everybody who was a receiver for Oklahoma State.
We like DraftKings, by the way. We got to deal with DraftKings. We're big DraftKings guys here.
Sky.
Yeah.
During college football season,
it does. Yes, I know all about
it. Rains from the sky. Garrett Rangel starts, and they list all their wide receivers in the 50s for yardage. I went and blanketed all those guys. I put out a video telling the world to blanket them, and money rained from the sky when Garrett Rangel started. So I don't have any confidence in that particular quarterback room, and that's an issue because they lost, you know, last year. Their ace defensive coordinator, Jim Knowles, went over to Ohio State. So they were recharging everything. Everything's turning over there, right? Yeah. Sans mullet. At UCF, we know what's going on there with Gus and what have you. That's a pretty good team. We know it's coming from AAC. I think it's going to be a tougher game than Houston because you do have Plumlee. You know, you have very experienced receiver core. You got a great running back in RJ Harvey and a good, solid, experienced offensive line. I think they returned four starters. Versus BYU, old friend Keaton Slovis. I hate Keaton. I don't think Keaton Slovis is that good at all. Right. By Puka Nacua, that's a problem. Out goes really good running back that they had. Brooks is gone now. They're replacing Maiden Robbins. You got a shot there. You're not beating at Oklahoma. I know they were down last year. I think they're humming in year two.
Yeah, West Virginia did beat them last year, first time.
I know.
The bowl game doing it in the Big 12. But Oklahoma's not going to be down back to back. They're not going to be down back to back years. Then you have Cincinnati, which Cincinnati's not what they were a couple years ago last year. But you got a shot. And then Baylor, West Virginia also beat Baylor last year too. That's another one of those games where you're going to have a lot of points. Baylor will turn it over, though. And this all comes down to a decision that, unlike what West Virginia has been doing in recent years and most teams have been doing, where they went ahead and brought in Austin Kendall. They went ahead and brought in JT Daniels. Neil Brown, in his make-or-break year for his fifth year with the program, and it's one of the worst five-year periods in the history of the program, that he decided to go with the incumbent players and have a battle and not bring in a veteran transfer player. It's going to be Garrett Green or it's going to be Nico Markel.
Very much.
And Nico's a former four-star from Arizona. Garrett Green's been there a while. The fan base is pretty split. I would guess from what I know that I think Garrett Green's going to probably start. He's the more experienced player. He did play most of those games that were wins last year. They're both dual-threat QBs. They both have looked good at times in the offseason. Garrett looked a lot better in the spring game. I think that might be an edge for him. But you're then playing the mental war games, though. If you don't have Nico play now, like, he's clearly going to transfer. He can't just never play. So then you lose him forever. There's a reason why Garrett hasn't played and been a starter to this point. He hasn't, prior to this year, looked that great in practices. So who knows? But that decision, that decision will really hinge on what this program does. But the schedule's not easy. And, you know, maybe they go over and win five, but I don't see a bowl appearance here, which would mean Neil Brown is done. Do you see a bowl appearance here? They're getting at least a six, or is it going to be lower than that? I mean, obviously the over-under is 4.5, so that could even be an over of 5. But that's not a year that'll save Neil Brown's job either.
I guess my question is, you know, and I watched the spring game. I thought Green looked pretty good.
Yeah, he looked good in the spring game. I do think
so. I've got some shares of Nico. I've got a share of him in Dynasty CFF. So I am invested. I actually have a share of Garrett too.
Everyone should know that you are like a pioneer of college football fantasy that I didn't. Yeah. I know it's a thing now, but you were telling me that back when I was in high school, this was a freaking thing. And at that time, there
I just made it.
There was no NIL. There was no transfer portal. Nobody should be gambling. All those rules were bad, according to the world. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know it was a thing that I could have been doing when I was 15. So I missed out.
Well, we had to find 11 other sickos like I had in Boston, you know, where I grew up. They're all savages, and we all liked pro fantasy. And I had a friend of mine who was a linebacker who is now a defensive coordinator in the Boston area at the D3 level.
Okay.
And he whipped us all together and said, "We're doing this. Go get your Phil Steele football magazine." If you look over here,
Phil Steele's pretty down on West Virginia.
This is all Phil Steele for like
Phil,
the past,
Phil Steele,
like
I respect.
20 of
very,
them.
Very down on West Virginia. Phil Steele is very down on West Virginia.
Mr.
Yeah, Phil as most would be. If you watched the spring game, though,
I did. I liked him. And,
so would it, outside of Garrett Green, though, because he can run, and it's about whether he can run and throw. The benefit for him could be the offensive line and experience, at least at the anchor positions. They have a real strong depth of running back. Not nearly as much as the last few years. They have really not lost a star.
I expected more,
when
I was going through it.
A lot of it's just depth. They lost Tony Mathis, but if CJ Donaldson is healthy all year, it's not going to be a big deal. So
no loss.
What have you noticed from the running game with so many running backs? CJ Donaldson now going to be the number one. Even the receivers, they bring in a whole new cast of characters with Devin Carter expected to be the number one. And then even Cole Taylor, who never could get an opportunity at LSU in the SEC, but Neil Brown refers to him as open by birth. The guy's a big man, and if his hands can get better, he's going to be utilized in the passing game. Any thoughts that any of those transfer additions could actually be the driving force of this team, even if not the QB? Like, what do you think of those moves and those players?
Well, it had to be done. You had to do it. Look it. Right. James, gone. BF Dubs, gone. We saw him at the Shrine Bowl. Prather, Maryland.
Yeah.
Reese Smith, gone. O'Loughlin, gone. You know, there's another tight end. There's Mathis, gone. Okay. There's no getting a bunch of freshmen and just developing them now for Neil Brown. If he doesn't do it now, he's gone. So Devin Carter, why not, coming out of NC State? He's a guy, I actually do have a share of him in fantasy. And why wouldn't you? Big-bodied receiver. He had, you know, 2 years ago against Clemson, all the West Virginia faithful, I would go back to 21 and their game against Clemson where he had a incredible game. And that's back when, Devin Leary, you know, was really good. Like huge. Watch that game, and that's really what you'll see out of Devin Carter. Is he worked over Andrew Booth, you know, who was I believe the first or very very early second round cornerback. He plays for the Vikings now. He was a first rounder, and watch the way that he worked the sidelines, downfield, creating separation at the top of the route stem. I've heard good things about the camp reports. I obviously haven't been there in person to see that, but you know,
he's looked good. No, Devin Carter's looked good in camp. I think the only thing that gives some people pause is he was brought in. He's talking about being the one. The program says he's going to be the one. He didn't have number one numbers in the ACC.
Correct, yeah.
So why, I guess, is a question.
He had Emezi was the wide receiver, the big wide receiver X for them in 2021. And then last year, everything changed because Leary got hurt. You know, and there's John Beck, who's not a particularly great offense coordinator. He ends up failing upwards, going to CCU. And then, you know, Thayer Thomas is the slot receiver. And when you have a new – they were just rotating quarterbacks. They had a fifth-year senior walk-on type guy who started the first game. Jack returned to the 36
Made a
Chambers.
Bowl game despite all this. But
it was madness. Chambers started the first game because they had MJ – that MJ, who was just really a true freshman, we got to give more just a little bit of rope here. So they started him, and that was another case of, guys, I believe it's legal in West Virginia. You got to be betting college football props, because Jack Chambers started a college football game. Jack Chambers.
Yeah.
I just faded everything having to do with him and everything to do with the passing game, and that's what happens, and that's how the magic happens, guys. So Jack Chambers, but then it goes on a true freshman with Moore. So, like, their passing game was just totally out of sync all season long. Like,
so he can have at least Bryce for Wheaton numbers where you're looking at instead of 400 yards, 700 yards, like that. Yes. That can happen.
And Bryce for Wheaton, I wish he had a little more wiggle to his game. How many, I mean, I don't need to tell the West Virginia faithful, but how many hitches did you see him to like catch? Like, okay, we got just a short little, you know, wide receiver screen, a little hitch. And instead of like having a little bit of left or right, he just goes straight up the field.
Yeah, he's like, fast.
There's no nuance, he just goes.
Yeah. And he even surprised at the combine running the 4.38, threw a shot across the bow and said, I'm going to run really fast. And he did set some records there, but didn't get drafted still. So maybe that's part of it. And he had all these different quarterbacks to deal with. But that story for Bryce Wheaton's over at WVU. So we'll see what he does with the Giants.
I feel like that is probably better. I mean, he's more nuanced in terms of what he was doing. And, you know, NC State had Robert and I come in, you know, a new offensive coordinator. When you get a new system, you get a whole new. And then the deionization of the program happens and everybody goes their separate ways. But.
The deionization. I might have to use that one. The deionization. I'm gonna drop that to Pat Narduzzi. I think he's gonna love that. The deionization.
Oh wow. Oh god damn. If I get a little of my stuff over there on the Nard Dog, then that's all good with me.
Jayshon
Polk could be somebody too. Give I like you Polk credit. Out of Kent State. He was really
okay. Good. Yeah. Polk. Many things.
He's a good slot. He's a slot. You know, take it for what it is, but like he could fill
could be a returner too.
That role. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So like those are two guys that I think can slot right in. You guys would know better than me on the depth side of things. But.
Yeah. I mean, it's an entirely new receiver room. It's really bizarre. Oh, yeah. Like the entire room is new. The running back room is basically the same, except for bringing in Jaheim White as a freshman, who's looked really, really good. Rodney Gallagher, a four-star, who's a relatively local product for the Pittsburgh area that went down at WVU. You're obviously not going to be saved by a true freshman right away, but I would not be shocked if he makes an impact and he gets some PT. They don't normally do that. But he was a product and a player that Neil Brown in West Virginia really recruited heavily. They consider him a local recruit, despite him not being a West Virginia player. So I would think he already has an NIL deal from high school. Like he's going to get in a little bit. I would not be shocked. He was not at spring ball. He will be at fall camp. He's a question mark on what happens. And by the way, as we now segue again, he was deciding between West Virginia and this team, who they're going to play in week one, and that is Penn State. So Penn State, according to DraftKings and all these sports books, Caesars, FanDuel, et cetera, they're at 9.5. So this is a little different story than West Virginia and Pitt. Penn State expects to be a top 15 team, a top 10 team, vying for the playoffs, certainly when it's expanded. They won a Rose Bowl last year, but they lost to their rivals. They lost to Michigan. They lost to Ohio State. A lot of fans are still upset about it because you can't just lose those games every year despite winning the Rose Bowl. They do lose some veterans from last year, and they put some players in the NFL, like P.J. Mustersom, Mitchell Tinsley, etc. Even Sean Clifford, to be honest. What do you think of the Penn State Nittany Lions, as you're getting me a card or something here for the video part of the show? It's available with video and audio, but the video is just so much better when you get Eric Froton on the what do you think of Penn State, though, this year? I mean, they're obviously heavily favored against West Virginia. That is a home game. But the entire year is about can they beat the rivals, can they beat the top dogs, and can they get in the playoff? So can they?
I love Penn State this year.
Okay.
I don't like them. I love them. Every single team that Penn State played last year that wasn't Michigan or Ohio State, they had like a 85% plus win expectancy. They just murdered every team that they play. Like, I thought, and I watched a lot of it, you know, because obviously I'm doing the scouting, just so you know, just a little bit of what I do for NBC. I wrote all 210 plus of the defensive and offensive line player profiles that go up during the draft.
A lot of work.
300 words each. It's like I'm watching all – I watch so much at Penn State tape. It's ridiculous.
Okay.
And I have shares. I have a big C2C share, Campus to Canton, of Drew Aller. So I am invested in Drew Aller, and I am also invested, if you can see it here, in Nick Singleton. Now, what this is, what you're looking at, is a gold one of 50 –
You are a collector. Wow.
Bowman University autograph.
I'm impressed.
Nick Singleton. Now I have accrued
under the glass too. Under the glass.
Under the glass. Yeah. Right there. Right in the trophy case. It's right behind me. I have a whole trophy case here.
Okay.
But I have accrued arguably the greatest collection of Nick Singleton Bowman U memorabilia in the world. I've got his 1 of 5 autograph, his red shimmer. I've got the gold. I've got every variation of his autograph and card because he is going to be the Bijan Robinson of 2025 class.
Wow.
He is 6 foot, 228. The guy is hitting home runs left and right. Like, you don't see in terms of – all right, so here's a great stat from a column I just wrote. So as Mike had alluded to, I am in the college – I do anything college football related, DFS, fantasy. I'm the number one college football player props expert in the world. I hit 69% of my plays over the course of the past three seasons. I do it every week.
Yeah, brush
that being said
– okay.
Last year, right, over the course of the past 4 full seasons, right, in 2018, there were 10 running backs that achieved 1,000 yards and 10 touchdowns while receiving less than 20 carries, all right? 10 in all of college football. Last year, there were just 2. That's the difference in just 5 years in how much teams are throwing the ball. So you just don't see low volume running backs hitting these elite thresholds like you used to.
Yeah, unless you're Bijan Robinson, right?
Unless you're a god. But Bijan had over 200 carries.
Yeah.
The only two guys to hit that mark, the 1,010 under 200 carries last year, Zach Charbonnet, who was a second round pick, he was a third running back taken, and was absolutely incredible for UCLA, and Nick Singleton. And it's because Singleton, he only had 156 carries last year, and he had 1,057 in 12 because the guy hits bombs at 228. He's outrunning people at 228. He doesn't just have good feet. Like, he can follow the blocks, but he's got the long speed. Pairing him up with Catron Allen, a fellow true freshman, and Aller, like, that backfield is going forward unabated. And it's going to be a problem. The only thing I'm really concerned, and you got Olafishanu, the number one. He would have been the number one left tackle in this draft. He would have been a top 5 picks in the 2023 draft. Decided to come back because he knows that Penn State has got something. And they're going to go and dominate this year. I sincerely think, I'm not just saying, like, I have shares in Aller. I have all that.
Yeah.
I think Penn State, I think it could be their year. I think they could legitimately win the Big Ten this year. It's a changeover at Ohio State. You know, they're weak. They can finally get
it all
them.
Comes down to those games, as you know. Like, no. Penn State is they're probably going to beat West Virginia. They should be able to beat a lot of these other Big Ten teams. Now, in past years, they have been upset occasionally by Illinois, and some of Maryland's been good in recent years. Like, some of those teams could give them problems, but Penn State should win, and if they don't, it would be a big deal and a major upset. But the whole year comes down to Ohio State and Michigan. They couldn't beat them last year. Michigan got in the playoff. Ohio State's always dangling right there. This is the year they could finally catch them. And the way it works at Penn State, as you know, if they go, you know, 10-2 and go to the Rose Bowl again but miss out in the playoff, the fan base is going to be unhappy. Like, they eventually they got to try to break through, but you're saying that this could be that year. It's playoff or bust for a lot of Penn State fans.
I think you got 2 years. I think this is a nice little two-year window. It's year one of Aller, you know, his starting, you know, Drew Aller. So I feel like you have to temper that and expect that there could be, and there likely will be, some growing pains. I watched the whole spring game, everything. And while I like seeing Aller and how he made his progression, especially we all saw the one clip where the touchdown pass was going right, center, left, hits it. And it was beautiful. And it was how it was supposed to go. But there was a few other passes that I'm watching, and I'm still seeing the footwork. He's a little bit on his toes. He's making that delivery. A little bit of wobble in his ball that I didn't expect to see.
So, Eric, let me –
still things he can improve upon. Yeah,
so if you're telling me there's things he can still improve upon, and obviously they're going to be maybe a run-first team, but most of the Big Ten knows this. They're going to be ready for this, and some of those stud defenses on the D-line, they're ready too. So my question to you is – the Penn State season comes down all, it's going to come down again to Ohio State and Michigan. They don't play either one of these teams until middle of the season. So they got to be like 6-7-0 before those games happen.
Building up the anticipation for those games. Yeah.
Yeah. So my question to you though is, outside of Ohio State and Michigan, which if they don't beat them again, they're probably going to have the same year they had last year where they're just outside the playoff. But if they beat one of them, at least they probably will get in. If they beat both of them, they're certainly going to get in. If they can go through the schedule and deal with those teams, they're going to be fine. It'll come down to those games. Outside of Ohio State and Michigan though, which is the other game on this schedule besides the Buckeyes and Wolverines that could have Penn State trip up to make those games irrelevant? Because if they lose to Illinois or Maryland or Northwestern, those Ohio State, Michigan games might not matter at all.
It's true. And I'm looking at the schedule. I would have to say it's either September 16th, week three at Illinois. Okay. You know, on the road in Champaign, they have new QB, you know, DeVito's out, but like, and they don't have Walters there, who is just an incredible DC. That's still like first, you know, on the road, first Big Ten game. That's a problem. But I think most likely it would probably be Iowa. You know, they get them at home.
Okay.
But, you know, Iowa, for the first time, has actually embraced Deion style. You know, here we are.
Yeah.
The transfer portal, you know, or Kiffin. You know, Lane Kiffin's going to be upset with me not giving him his Portal King status, you know. But
sure. Sure.
I'm sorry. You've been trumped.
Narduzzi didn't speak on Lane Kiffin.
The Lane train. You know, yeah, a detente between Nardog and the Lane train. But
yeah.
I'd say it's probably Iowa, you know, where okay. Brian Ferentz's contract is literally tied to scoring 25 points a game, which would be like 8 points more. I think it's like 16, 17 last year. Pathetic. But, you know, that's at least a team that has talent, has brought in some good guys. Could actually get some competent, you know, at least steady QB play for the first time.
Okay. You know, Iowa's normally a good team.
McNamara, he's not exciting, but like McNamara's at least he can, you know, hold the baseline. You know, they can inhabit.
The one I would point to could be later in the year. And it could be, I believe it's after they already play Ohio State. So they could have Ohio State where maybe they would somehow beat Ohio State, or even if they would lose, it's right before. So it's in the middle, Eric. You have Ohio State, then you have Indiana. Probably you're going to beat Indiana there. But right before Michigan, I do wonder if a very, very – it's a trap game, and it's a veteran Maryland team that's been in a bowl game a few years in a row now. They're a veteran team. This is kind of the swan song for this cast of characters, but they are maybe the most veteran senior rated team in the Big Ten. I'm not saying they're going to go ahead and win 10 games. They should at least win 7 or 8 again. And they maybe could surprise some teams. They were close to some upsets last year. They mostly took advantage of FCS teams to get in the bowl. But that's right before Michigan, after Ohio State. So whether you beat the Buckeyes or not, you can get up or down. And Maryland has a real veteran team. That could be a trip up in a trap game right before Michigan and ruin kind of the whole hype train in what Penn State Michigan could be. So if that happens, remember this show. And I will brush my shoulders off. That's where I'm going right now. If they're going to get tripped up, I think it could be there. But it could be a special year for Penn State for sure. Eric, I appreciate the time. It was great catching up with you. This was the first virtual for us. We did a lot in person at the Shrine Bowl and the Combine. So I'm hoping to see you in early September in Happy Valley.
So I'll be in touch, Mike, obviously. I'm going to try to make that. I think I'm going to do it.
Okay.
And we will obviously get to hang out in the press box. You'd show me around the place. I haven't been to Beaver Stadium yet. So.
Okay, man, it is fantastic. I will definitely show you around. We'll definitely be there. Regardless, we'll do one of these shows before the season, maybe there as well.
Absolutely.
So, Eric, I definitely appreciate it, man.
Thank you, Mike. Take it easy, brother.
All right. So, again, Eric Froton of NBC Sports. He is their lead college football and NFL draft analyst. He is mediocre on Pitt, kind of feeling like they're going to be what they are. He is maybe, as everybody else, down on the West Virginia Mountaineers. And yeah, the schedule's not favorable. And who knows? Who knows? Maybe they'll get lucky and win more. If it's not a bowl season, though, Neil Brown is gone. And he knows that, too. And then he is very, very high on Penn State, maybe higher than some, but there are expectations this year that it's playoff or bust after a Rose Bowl year. They got to beat the rivals regardless of what else they do. Eric, very, very high on the Nittany Lions and thinks 9.5 might be low, and then they could go 10-plus again, if not 11, which then you get 11, you lose one. They can probably afford to lose one of those Ohio State and Michigan games. They're going to have one of the tougher schedules in terms of maybe quality losses if you have to have that argument of the year. But they got to beat one of them. And they can't lose the other games. So we'll see if they get trapped or not. Again, you can check out every episode of Mic Drop here throughout the Believe Network, also Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn, etc. You can find the Pitt coverage at Pittsburgh Sports Now, the West Virginia coverage. I am on the WV beat at WV Sports Now, and of course, our Penn State coverage throughout the Sports Now family of networks at Nittany Sports Now. The odds here were thanks to DraftKings, so daps to DraftKings, of course, one of our betting partners throughout the Sports Now family networks, and also someone that we work with throughout Believe Network properties as well. Again, thanks to Eric Froton of Embassy Sports. I am Mike Osti, and we are months away, but I am already excited for the new college football season.